southwest winds 10 to 15 knots, decreasing to 5 knots after midnight. Wind waves will be 1 to 2 feet, northwest swell 4 to 8 feet at 9 seconds. Current temperatures around the bay, Salinas is 52, Watsonville is 53, and Monterey 51. And here at KSCO Studios, it's 55 degrees. The official time is 10:06 and 24 seconds. You're tuned in to KSCO 1080, and I'm Nikki James. It's time for MZ and Saturday Special. Let's do it.
Nikki, I think it's so great that you're so precise about the, 10:06 and umpteen seconds.
Thank you.
Very, very nice. Good. How are you today? Be honest.
I'm very well, actually. I feel great. How about you?
Yeah, pretty good. You want me to be honest, don't you?
I do, always.
All right. I'm upset about three things.
Tell me.
I'm upset about the weather. I do not like it when the weather is monochrome instead of full live color.
I agree. Yeah. But we do need the rain. If it leaves, that'll be
perfect. Okay. All right. I'll go along with that. But it's not.
I have a garden.
It's not going to leave today.
Tomorrow it'll be sunny. So just
okay.
Let it,
all right. I can live with that. Okay, that's good. So that's good. I'm upset with. I'm upset about no friends to go to breakfast with.
What?
Yeah. I don't have any friends. I realized today. I wanted to go to breakfast. I used to go to breakfast with friends before the Saturday, one friend or another,
right,
before the Saturday special. And I realized that most of my friends, or just about all my friends that I used to have, moved out of the area for one reason or other. Mm-hmm. So I called one of them, on a local phone number, and it rang in Costa Rica. And I had a long talk with my friend Dennis. Maybe we'll get into that.
And he wouldn't come up for breakfast.
No. We decided that, if we could have faxed him here or emailed him here.
Yeah.
The technology hasn't gotten to that point yet. But maybe someday. Who knows?
That would
right?
be perfect. Yeah, for sure.
But it really bothered me. I just thought about that for the first time today. It's sort of sad that all the it's nice to be able to talk to the friends, even if they're on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
And maybe even see them on a Skype video or something like that for
good old
free.
Good technology.
But it's not the same thing as going to breakfast with,
I'll go to breakfast with you.
Really?
Yeah, I love breakfast.
Cool. We'll set that up. Okay. Maybe next week and just put the radio station on automation.
Yeah, no worries.
All right. And the other third thing I'm upset about is our good friend Charlie, who is on this radio station from 4 to 7 p.m., doing the afternoon drive show that we call Happy Hour.
Yeah.
He's a very... I'm very surprised and upset about Charlie. Charlie went on for 2 hours about not liking the Beatles.
Ooh.
And...
That's fire material.
That was bad enough. But a lot of people called in and agreed with him.
Oh, what?
I'm shaking. Now, what started this... is earlier this week I went to a broadcast legends meeting that I go to 4 times a year up in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And this is a group of people who have been in radio and television in the broadcasting in radio or television in the Bay Area, over the years. And since I was a little kid, these people are heroes of mine. And the sad thing is that every meeting I go to, there's 2 or 3 more silent mics, as we call them, who have since passed on since the previous meeting.
Yeah.
But I was sitting at the luncheon table with my friend David Jackson, who is the curator of the Bay Area Broadcast Museum. I got to get the right URL for people to check in. I'll do that during the program today. We're going to play a little piece from that because at lunch that day on Thursday, David said to me and everybody else how excited he was to have an interview. Someone sent him an interview of a radio great named Hilly Rose. Okay, this is one of the original radio talk show hosts in the whole world.
Oh,
okay,
wow.
Big time. Original KGO, KFI, KCBS, big station guy, interviewing two of the Beatles, Paul McCartney and George Harrison, in August of 1965, in San Francisco.
Oh, my God.
And they never granted interviews to anybody. But this guy, Hilly Rose, was so persistent in what he went through to get an interview. And then the actual interview was sent to Dave, and he was raving about it. And I said, Dave, you got to email me that interview, right, so I can play it on the radio since I have nothing else for the Saturday special.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know what? I mean, I can't think. Things just happen.
No, we'll play
when I don't
Beatles
have
music.
A Saturday special, and I don't have a topic or a guest, things just sort of fall out of the sky in MZ's world, you know.
That's awesome.
That fell out of the sky. So, well, let's see. You know what? We haven't started the program officially, so we really need to do that, right, before we do anything else. Okay, I'm going to do that right now. Are you ready? 3, 2, 1.
Good morning. A brighter day is here. Good morning. May we bring you cheer.
We've got time, we've got tunes, we've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSCO Radio.
Good morning! Welcome to Saturday Special Hour number 1. What date is this? Sometime in March still. Is it the 30th? Whatever it is, it is. Welcome to Hour number 1 of the Saturday Special on your favorite radio station. AM 1080 KSCO, the last independent voice of broadcast radio in the United States. Stay with us for the next 2 hours. We think you'll enjoy it.
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
And there's no risk here involved at all, because if you don't enjoy it after 2 hours, I promise I'll give you your money back. Okay. I want to welcome my friend that I'm proud to call a friend, Hilly Rose, to KSCO. Hey, Hilly, you're on.
Good to hear that that long-ago intro, Michael. I heard it for so many years when I lived in Santa Cruz, and it brings back great memories.
How come everybody's leaving Santa Cruz? I mean, you know, I just, like I was saying, I would have gone to lunch with you back, or breakfast with you back when you, but I couldn't do that so easily today, because it would, you know, it's, you're in San Francisco, and I'm here, and...
I don't know, but isn't the town growing? Aren't there adding more people?
I don't think, you know, that's a great question. We'll put that out to our audience. I don't think it's growing. If there are more people coming in, there are just as many people going out, I think, because of the high cost of living here. But, you know, I'm not positive about that, but I don't know. A lot of the people that I know who have left for a lot of them because of the expense, and they could sell their house here and buy a house somewhere else, get four houses for the price that they got their house, that they sold their house here. Other people have left because they don't like the politics here. You know, why did you leave?
Well, I actually like Santa Cruz and miss a lot of things there. In fact, I miss the Walnut Street Cafe, and so next time I'm there, let's have breakfast there.
Oh, that'd be great.
I miss their tofu scrambles. I live in San Francisco, and I don't know anybody that does tofu scrambles like that.
Oh, wow, in that whole city.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, and there are all kinds of things that I miss about the town. But, no, my wife is a San Francisco girl, born and raised here, and she... what's the word I'm looking for? She always, you know, we moved to Los Angeles for many years, and then Santa Cruz, and she just wanted to come home. And
I gotcha. Well, that makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, you know, and so
it's not so far.
And we've been married 35 years, so
I
wanted to keep her.
Wow. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Mary's great. So now I understand, and I never asked you that question before, but it makes all the sense in the world, Hilly. Fill us in on what's new with you. I mean, you've been what a colorful, you know, professional life you've had. When did you get into radio and media?
Oh, when I was 14 years old.
Oh my gosh!
but professionally, when I was 16, 17, something like that. joined the union when I was 18, I believe, and started out, you know, there's a canard, if that's a good word.
Yeah.
I don't know what it means.
It's the name of a cruise ship line, but it also means a lie of some sort, right? And I never quite understood what
there's a canard that says that if you're going to get into broadcasting, you got to start, you know, in a little small town somewhere and sweep the floor and do a lot of other things. It just isn't true. You know, I advise my children the same way, and my children are doing and have done very well in broadcasting.
Sure.
But the answer to your question is, I was in Chicago, and I started to write out on a network program called Author's Playhouse on NBC. And I did things like Mr. First Nighter. I mean, we're really going back here into the late 30s, early 40s. In fact, I was only one of five people that ever appeared on a major blockbuster daytime program called Ma Perkins. You know, it's just one of those things. You start out and you keep going, and if you want to succeed, you just knock on doors and knock on doors and knock on doors, and it really hasn't changed in show business. It's the same way in Hollywood.
You knew Ira Blue, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what Ira Blue said to me when I was 13 years old, because I used to hang out at KGO when I was old enough to get on a bus and, you know, and head up there and just sort of camp there, you know. And he walked by, and I don't know, I'd seen him on television or something, somehow recognized him and said, Mr. Blue, you know, I really want to get into radio. How do you do it? And he said, come in, son, come in. And God, we went past the security and everything, and I got to go in the elevator with him. And he said to me, you're going to knock on so many doors. That's what you just said. And a lot of them are going to slam in your face. And one day a door is going to open, and an arm is going to reach out and grab you by the shoulder and drag you in, and you're not going to be able to get out.
Yeah, so that's the way it works. Worked that way for me. Worked that way for my kids. You know, my son who died. Was an ABC anchor, and same kind of thing.
Judd Rose, and later on CNN, right?
He was on CNN. He had his own show on CNN. Right. But same thing, you know. You start at the top is my attitude.
Uh-huh.
Of course, I don't know, that doesn't help all the people that you employ at your place, and you say, stick with me, kid, you'll be a star someday.
Well, I haven't really said that, because I'm not sure that that's true. I think people are here because it's an enjoyable job.
Could be.
You know? And I mean, that's why I do it. It ain't for the money, I'll tell you that. It's for the love.
Yeah, that's right. Well, of course, that's the point. You have to love what you're doing. And I grew up, actually, I was raised right around the corner from the old NBC CBS studios in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And, you know, I used to go over there and hang out and see all these people like Bob Hope and Bing Crosby and say, God, that sounds... it looks like an easy way to make a living, and it's fun, and it has been all these long, many years.
Wow. Well, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to get this program up and running. It's about an 8.5-minute interview, I think, that you did in 1965. You want to tell us the story while I'm getting this? I emailed it to myself so I could, and I'm going into my email here at the radio station to see if I can grab the thing. And so I hope to time it so that when you're done with your, you know, story, you know, leading up to this whole thing, that I'll be able to play it here.
Well, it's interesting to me that you said a lot of people didn't like the Beatles. I really
on who listened to this station in the afternoon drive, and so, you know, I was so upset. I mean, I don't know what to say or do.
Well, the Beatles were a phenomenon of their time. They were sort of like Hannah Montana today with the teenagers. You know, the people scream and holler, and with Sinatra in his day, when he first started, all the females were going ooh-ah and what have you.
Uh-huh.
And it was that way with the Beatles. And they came to America and went on Ed Sullivan and were an absolute smash from the beginning. So when they did their tour and they came to San Francisco, the Beatles did a press conference when they arrived that night before their performance. And it was a rollicking good time had by all, because they had a good sense of humor, and it was a lot of fun being around them. But the they weren't giving interviews. They just plain weren't giving interviews. I was working for KCBS at the time.
As a news reporter?
As a news reporter, and also I had a show called Spectrum 74. I don't know if you remember that.
No, I don't. But
that was an afternoon show. I think it went on at 1 o'clock.
Was it a call-in show?
Well, you know, it's interesting you should ask that question, because it really was before tape. It was about 1960, 61. And there really hadn't evolved the tape yet to a point where you could have it. And, you know, you always had to have that 7-second delay so somebody wouldn't blaspheme on the air.
Yeah.
And
the audio condom, I call it.
Yeah. It's about right. Yeah. I live in Chicago. Mike Wallace, as a matter of fact, they had a show at the Shea Paris. And he used to interview people on the telephone, and he'd say, so what do you think about such and such? And then he'd be silent, and then he'd come back on and say, oh, I see, same. You said this, that, and the other thing. And that's the way we started at KCBS. It was a call. It was not a call-in show when it started.
And, but it evolved?
Pardon? But it evolved, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And, Fred Gerner, there was one other guy who was on the show. I can't think of his name right now. But so the three of us, we'd sit around a table and we'd gossip and gag and do all kinds of things. And then we'd have live people come in. And in those days, Lucille Ball would, anybody who was in town would stop by. And that was the kind of show it was. But we would do tape recordings, and I wanted to get the Beatles. By golly, I was, it's the old thing we were just talking about, Michael. You got to have stick-to-itiveness. You got to be determined you're going to succeed. And I was determined I was going to succeed.
Yeah.
So we tried to, go through the regular channels, and the Beatles aren't doing any interviews. And they had a lot of publicity when they came to town because no hotel would take them. They were afraid what the girls, the young teenage ladies and preteens would do to the hotel. So they snuck them into the Hilton Hotel, the only one that would take them. And I called the Hilton and I asked to talk to their manager.
Yes.
And they gave me somebody. I don't know who he was. I guess he was their road manager. And I told him what I wanted, and he said, I'm sorry, they're not doing any interviews. And I said, look, what's happening city to city that you're going to, I just grabbed for anything that would make sense, that would make him want to give me an interview. I said, it's terrible. Somebody's going to get hurt. Somebody's going to get killed. The girls are trampling everybody. They're screaming. They're hollering. They're out of control. I think the Beatles need to make a definitive statement about crowd control and calming themselves. And he said, "Oh, that's not a bad idea. We're very worried about this."
So you push the right button, it sounds.
I guess you keep pushing them until something happens.
Yeah.
Anyway, he said, "Just a minute," and he said, "I'll be right back with you." So I waited 5 minutes. I waited 10 minutes. I waited 20 minutes. I waited 40 minutes on the telephone, and finally he picks up the phone and he says, "Hey, are you still there?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm still here. You told me to wait." And he couldn't believe it. He just couldn't believe it.
You waited that long that you didn't get discouraged and say, "Oh, screw it."
Yeah, that's right. So he said, "All right, just a minute. I'll call upstairs." So he calls and I hear him pleading with the boys. He's saying, "Look, this is important. This is really important. Yes, it's important. Yes, yes, yes." Finally, he comes back on the line. He says, "Okay, can you be here in 30 minutes? "Yeah, I can do that," because we were at the
Palace Hotel. I'm surprised they didn't tell you to do it on the phone, so you actually got to go, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
uh-huh.
So I ran over to the hotel. Again, maybe he didn't trust him on the phone, Anyway, to make a long story short, he said, "Be here in 30 minutes, and then he gave me a special knock that I had to, bump, 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 bump.
Uh-huh.
And I did that, and I got to the hotel and went upstairs the hallway, and there were about 18 people standing there waiting who knows how long they'd been there. special people, I'm sure, who wanted to see the Beatles. Anyway, I gave a special knock, and the door opened, and I walk in. And here are four Beatles in their underwear, which was quite a sight. And
these guys were like 20, 21 to 24 years old,
yeah,
I think,
something
right?
Like
something, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but they were the biggest success in show business.
Sure, sure. 1960, August of 65, right?
It was 64, 65, whatever.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly, because that's when I was...
It says here, August, if the date is right on the label, on the file, on the MP3 audio file, it says August 19th, 1965, CBS Radio, Hilly Rose, McCartney, et cetera, interview
right.
At the Cow Palace.
Yeah,
I mean, not at the Cow Palace, but when they were appearing at the Cow Palace.
They were appearing at the other. And, you know, it's a huge place, and, you know what happened at Altamont. There was a death there.
Yeah.
Not with the Beatles, but it was, you know, a terrible thing.
Sure.
So that's, you know, I think two things working for me. One is I struck the right button, and the second thing was they sort of owed Ed Sullivan, who was on CBS, for their immediate success.
Right. And, oh, yeah.
So
I never thought about that.
So I just think it was serendipity, you know,
yeah.
And that's what everything is. I've broken a lot of stories in my career. I really have. This is certainly off message at the moment, but you remember when the Marines were in Lebanon and they were bombed.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if you remember this agony that the nation went through, Michael, because when it was bombed, the barracks, they lost all the records. And so typical of the government, they couldn't tell anybody who was killed and who wasn't killed.
Yeah.
And it was just terrible.
So everybody knew, I mean, people knew that it had happened, and they were just on edge.
Yeah,
it's
they were
like
on
the
edge.
It's like the people on 9/11. I mean, is my person still alive or not?
That's right. So at that time, and this went on day after day, and the news media was saying, oh, it's awful, and we don't know who was killed and who's still alive. So I made a phone call to a friend of mine who was with AT&T at that time, and I said, look, you guys are not stupid. You can put telephone boxes up there by the Marine barracks and have these people call home and let their parents know that they're still alive. And the guy at AT&T said, yeah, why didn't we think about that? And sure enough, within 24 hours, they had telephone boxes up there. And these guys called home, and the national agony ended.
Wow.
And it was just a simple matter of me, pushing a button.
Yeah.
And, well, the Marines, gave me awards for this and everything else. But I wasn't trying to tell that for any reason other than say that sometimes you just got to have the right idea and get to the right people. So that's what happened here. And anyway, so I walk in, and the Beatles are all there, and they were disgruntled. They didn't want to give an interview. I don't blame them. They were giving concerts and everything else. And they knew what the interview was. It wasn't the typical Beatles interview about their music and so forth. It was supposed to be about, telling their fans to cool it, which they didn't think was too good an idea. Anyway, John particularly didn't like that. So when you play this tape, the first thing you'll hear is somebody yelling, and that would be John, because he wanted to ruin it. Did anything he could do to ruin it.
Really? He wanted to sandbag the whole thing? So
yeah,
he really did. And not only did he not want to participate, he didn't want the other guys doing it.
Exactly.
Son of a
gun.
So,
well, they were carefree, cut-up kind of guys. And then he went into the bathroom, and he began flushing the toilet loudly as he could, figuring that would ruin the interview. But I had a special piece of equipment that was unidirectional. And so it only picked up the voice directly in front of me. He didn't.
So you don't hear any of the toilet flushing?
I don't think so.
Okay.
People can judge for themselves when they hear the tape. So anyway, I got John, and I mean rather Paul and George, who were willing to do it. Ringo didn't want to do it either. So that was the end of that. So I did the two of them, and as you will hear, their voices are so well known, so it's them.
Yeah.
But the
tenor
of it is not as bright as it might be, but nonetheless, it's truly the Beatles. And
you're 43 years older than you were then.
That's true.
But to me, you don't sound a day older.
Well,
that's amazing.
I think it's a little old. You listen to it, it's sort of like listening to that intro to your program. It isn't from this era.
Uh-huh.
And the style that I use, CBS News, it's just different than the kind of free-form talking that we do on the radio today.
Yeah.
So with all those things in mind, maybe it's time for you to play the tape.
Okay, thank you. And you'll stay with us, right?
For a little bit.
Okay,
yeah.
Great, thanks. Here we go.
We're talking with two of the Beatles, Paul McCartney and George Harrison. Gentlemen, can you give any specific reason that you believe has touched off this worldwide hysteria you're currently enjoying? Paul?
No, you know, because none of us know why people like us at all. I can't imagine why anyone would like us. But I think, you know, we've tried to work it out with various people talking, and it seems to be that it's a combination of a lot of things. Most of them, we don't even know what they are, you know. Very difficult question, but sorry, I'm a bit vague about it. You know.
George?
The main thing is, because we were a bit different, at the time when we came out, we were a bit different to everything else that had been around. So, you know, that made them like us, because they were ready for a change. But I don't know why they like us so much, or why so many people like us.
Well, there are so many competitors on the market now, if you will, so many people who have copied you or tried to do something different, and yet they're not making it the same way you are.
But that's always the same. I mean, when Elvis Presley first arrived, he had thousands of people impersonating him and trying to do his style, but he's still there, isn't he? And they never did make it. It's always the original first there, first served, I think.
With the worldwide adulation that you fellas have, and obviously the large amounts of money that accrue to it, your future is apparently secured. What do you look forward to personally? What can you possibly have as the next thrill for yourselves? Paul?
Thrill? I don't know. Yeah, I don't think about thrills or anything particularly. The thing I look forward to is just being able to do what I want to do. I don't know yet what it will be, but if at the age of, I don't know, 30, when I'm an old man, something like that, you know, if I feel like doing a certain thing, if I feel like just, I don't know, getting a house in the country, or if I feel like, well, I don't know, just writing songs for the rest of my life, at least I'll be able to do it. And so, in fact, all I look forward to is happiness. Sounds corny, but it's true, you know.
What is happiness, Paul?
Well, anything. Well, you know, you must know what it is, you know, for your personal happiness. I can't explain what mine is, but, you know, you've got certain things that you enjoy doing. Well, being able to do them, that's good enough for me, you know.
George, what is your definition of happiness?
It's about the same, being able to do and enjoy what, you know, we like to do and when we like to do it. And, you know, all the other little things that are all around that, you know, that all add up to it.
Let me ask you a very important question. You have these howling mobs of teenagers wherever you go, and this, of course, you must enjoy because it reflects a large success for you. But you must have some feelings of responsibility for the image of teenage irresponsibility that accrues to your appearances. What are you doing personally to set an example for this generation, which is tomorrow's woman?
We never do anything to try and set examples, because we don't like people who do set examples. So there's no reason on earth, apart from us being singers and the people like us as singers, there's no other reason why we should make an example, you know, doing anything. And
I think the worst kind of people are the people who are always trying to do good, and they make themselves out to be, look so good that it's just sickening, you know. I mean, I've always hated goody-goodies, and so we're not going to stand up and preach as though we're great. You know, we've got just as many faults as anyone else, and you know, so it's stupid for us to try and preach to it.
In other words, you're saying...
Excuse me, go on.
Sure. In other words, you're saying that just because you sing well and you have a large following, this doesn't necessarily mean that your politics should be the politics of the teenage following that you have.
Well, that's true, you know. I mean, if anybody does sort of go potty and goes mad, well, then it's definitely not our concern, because, you know, we could do it ourselves, I suppose. It's just that, you know, we wouldn't like to see anybody going mad because of it.
And then another thing, I don't think our fans or the majority of our fans would like to see us standing up saying, now, kids, do this and don't do that and give up smoking. And, you know, they'd all think we were potty.
Because, you know, we smoke and we drink occasionally. I mean, you know, we're not trying to say that we're those kind of people who don't smoke and don't drink and we're perfect. You know, we're far from it. And so if if we're far from it, then why should everybody else be perfect, or why should we preach? In fact, we can't practice what we would preach, so we just don't want to do it. You know?
We can't preach what we don't practice, you mean?
No,
something like that.
No, I was right. I was right. Don't worry.
Do I understand you carefully, then? What you're saying is that everybody must think for themselves.
Well, yeah, that's roughly it, you know. And anybody who does get up and preach a thing has definitely got to practice it and has definitely got to be 10 times as good as the people they're trying to make people into.
This leads me to my next question.
In
your viewpoint, how important is schooling?
It's important, you know. All of us have had quite good educations. I don't think it's not the end. You know, I think the main thing is just to understand yourself or to be able to think for yourself. Education probably helps with that, you know. But I mean, actual schooling and actual learning of subjects and sort of languages and maths and things isn't as important as just learning to think for yourself and think about yourself, you know.
Well, the question I'm getting at is, here in the United States, we have a very large dropout problem. People who say, well, they leave school. They say, there's no point in completing my schooling, my high school education. There's no reason for it. I'm going to get myself a haircut and a guitar or something and you know, be like the Beatles. And that doesn't make sense.
Well, actually, it doesn't make sense because I was at school till I was 18. You know, I stayed on at school quite a long time. And John stayed on at school. And, you know, we went in for all our exams and things. And so anyway, if they're trying to be like us, they might as well stay on at school, you know.
In fact, on all of our records in America, if you look at the label, it says don't drop out.
One last question, fellas. Do you have any advice for teenagers in other cities as to how to avoid getting hurt in the Beatle crush?
Well, don't push yourselves, you know. And if you see anybody pushing, try and suggest to them not to push. Hard question, you know, because if you just turn around to someone and say don't push, they'll probably smack you right in the face and you get your hurt already, you know. Difficult. I should say just don't push yourself, you know.
George, you have a word of advice?
Just the same, you know. I mean, there's bound to be somebody pushing, but if the people listening don't shove, that's going to be less for a start, isn't it?
But if everybody pushes, you're going to leave pretty quickly. So it'd be smarter for them to maintain their composure.
Well, you know, I mean, we always like wild concerts anyway. But the thing is, people interpret the word wild as everybody going around ripping seats up. That's not what we like. We like everybody to enjoy themselves and not go around ripping seats up and throwing bottles and things. Because, I mean, you know, there's no sense in that anyway. But on the other hand, we don't like people just sort of sitting on their hands, you know. We'd rather have them doing what they want to do, except when it reaches the point of ripping up seats and things, you know.
So at all times, comport themselves, ladies and gentlemen, but have a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
We've been talking with Paul McCartney and George Harrison, two of the Beatles.
Thank you.
This is Hillard Rose, CBS News, San Francisco.
Hey, wow, what a great interview. Well, God, that was wonderful.
It's terrible when you realize that two of the Beatles are gone now.
I know. Let me finish
the story.
Sure.
So I got my tape together, and I thanked the guys. And I got signatures from all of them, which I gave to my children, who then tried to sell them at school, and nobody would believe that they really were signatures of the Beatles. But when I went downstairs after the interview, there were maybe 100 girls outside the Hilton, and they said, "Hey, did you see the Beatles?" And I thought to myself, "No, I better say no, because they would have torn me to pieces and torn my tape apart and everything."
It's
the way it is. But you know, it just put me in mind of how times have changed. You know what happened last year at the Giants Stadium. When somebody was pushing and somebody turned around and shot him as a result.
Yeah.
What was going on in the Beatle years was nothing compared to the way we are today.
I know. I couldn't help but wonder, I don't know if this can ever happen, but I sure would love to hear you do an interview with Paul McCartney today. And, cause that interview that I just heard, that's almost 43 years old. Showed Paul to be a really, you know, Paul and George both to be really, really nice people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in later years, I don't, I think Paul McCartney is still probably a very nice person.
Seems
but I think he seems a little more aloof these days. I'm not sure he would be the same person now that he was then.
Well, you're not the same, Michael.
No one's the same, I guess.
We've all changed over the years. Yes, I think Paul came through his divorce a gentleman in the face of a rather strange wife that he had.
Yeah.
So, yes, I would love to do another interview with him, of course, but it ain't going to happen, you know.
Well, you don't know that for sure.
No, that's true. He's in England and I'm here.
Who knows?
Yeah, well, that's the whole point, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's what was great about radio, more so than even television, is that you were able to go, you had the ability to do things that were open and free and just didn't worry about a lot of things you have to worry about today. The fun has gone out of radio.
Not totally. We still have fun around here.
But, well, you do because you're the last independent station.
Yeah, and so, but do you think that John Lennon, do you think that the reason he didn't want to participate is because he didn't like what he thought the subject was going to be? Or do you think he just wanted no part? Because when Paul was saying, we don't want to use our celebrity to, you know, influence what kids think, I think John wanted to do that. I think if he would have been in the room with you, I think he would have chimed in and said, oh, he would have probably disagreed with Paul.
Well, actually, John was in the room. I mean, he was in the bathroom flushing the toilet.
Yeah.
But it was a very small suite, and that surprised me. You know, the Hilton maybe just had small rooms at the time, but or maybe it was the only place they could find security for the Beatles. But he actually heard the conversation. So, you know, I really do believe, Michael, that he was an oddball fellow, as you well know.
Yeah.
Just being married to Yoko, my goodness.
I had one conversation with John Lennon myself.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, and it was a live on-air conversation at KALX in Berkeley when I was on the air doing at the student radio station during the riots of 1969, during the People's Park riots, you know, when there were a lot of anti-war protesters and everybody was upset with the government. Not too different from today, where people were upset that that the university, which was really the government of California, was going to build a gymnasium on a big strip of land right in the middle of the city, right near where the campus is.
Wasn't that People's Park?
Yeah, that was People's Park. They were going to build a gym there, and the students and the community had built a garden there, right in the middle of the city, a nice green garden. People were really upset about that, and it evolved into violence. And I happened to be on the air, which was the only way I could get on the air, because everybody else at the radio station, you know, who had their own shows, they took great delight in keeping me off the air. But because all the excitement was outside, they said, oh, give it to Zwirling. He'll run the radio station, you know. And boy, were they jealous when they found out that when I happened to be, you know, at the control of the radio station during that short period of time, none other than John Lennon and Yoko Ono themselves called, and they called the student radio station asking to be put through to go on the air to issue an entreaty to the students who were listening, to the kids who were listening to the radio. No damn pox worth losing your life over, is what he said. And the most articulate Yoko Ono, they were in Montreal at the time at the bed piece and the hair piece, you know, the bed in.
Oh, yeah.
And she was very articulate and said, yeah, he's right. You know, I mean, he's right. Anyhow, golly gee. Yeah, I get off on this kind of stuff. And I hope our listening audience appreciates that. You're listening to the KSCO Saturday Special on your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO. It's MZ with a special guest for a little bit of time here, Hilly Rose. Hilly was one of the original talk show hosts in the whole country, you know, and started talk radio, in talk radio back in the early 60s, I believe. Am I right?
Yeah, at KCBS.
Uh-huh. And
we must give credit to Ken Ackerman, who most people should remember from Music Till Dawn on KCBS.
Yes.
And Ken was the one who saved that tape of the Beatles.
I gotcha.
And he turned it over. Actually, he turned over all his tapes to the museum.
Yes.
He was a pack rat with those kinds of things, and that's how they came up with the tape, because I didn't have a copy of it. Who thought to save those things, and, you know, time that we did them? But, yeah, it was very good of him to give all that stuff to the museum. So there
and
we
thank
are.
You for mentioning Ken, because Ken is a member of Broadcast Legends. And we got to have, and Ken is a great guy, and he still lives up in Marin, and we got to have him on the Saturday special one of these days. I don't think we've ever done that, and that's
yeah,
gave me
I think
a great
he's got
idea.
A lot of great stories too.
And by the way, there is so much. There is just a treasure trove of audio material at Bay Area Radio, all one word, BayAreaRadio.org. So if any of you want to listen to, you know, cuts of, you know, sound bites and interviews like what you've heard, you can hear that. You can hear what we just played and probably hundreds or thousands of other really interesting audio clips.
You know what my favorite audio clip is, Michael?
Yeah.
It's the old KSFO jingle. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, well, we can play. I can just click on BayAreaRadio.org.
Well,
we can probably get it up here.
They have a whole story about how Johnny Mann and the Johnny Mann Singers, and how they came up with that just wonderful thing that Don Sherwood would use, in fact, the station used to use. And it was magical at Christmas time to listen to this beautiful song about San Francisco and the San Francisco Bay Area.
Uh-huh.
So that's my favorite of all of the pieces that are on there.
Maybe we could, yeah. I've got it up, Bay Area Radio Museum, but it's actually www.bayarearadio.org. And anytime you want to go there, the guy who's put this together, we had him on a Saturday special a year or two ago, David Jackson, just a prince of a guy who, I guess, since he was a little kid, you know, was so interested in this kind of stuff. But unlike most people who are interested in and appreciate this, he collected it and really put together a collection that is accessible to everybody. And he doesn't make money off this at all. It's just a total labor of love. And it's something so special. In fact, he put together an annual thing, whereby it's the Hall of Fame, the Bay Area Radio Museum Hall of Fame. And there have been, I think, three classes already, or two classes, and the third one, it's being voted on right now. So it's great. Anyhow, gee, Hilly, thanks very much for being with us here.
My pleasure.
Someone is calling. I haven't even invited anybody to call yet, and there's only like 11 minutes left on the program, but if you want to call the station on the Saturday special here, the number, as always, is 479-1080. What's new with you before you leave here? Tell us briefly what you're doing these days.
I'm still broadcasting. You can't take the radio out of the old guy. But like everybody else, I've gone to the internet, and I have a worldwide audience of well over 20 countries. I do a program for Fate Magazine. That's F-A-T-E, Fate Magazine. And it's www.fatemag.com/radio. And I'm heard in 20 different countries or more. And it surprises me sometimes because I have listeners in Japan and China, of all places, even with their cutting back on people's listenership. But the bulk of the audience is in America and Canada and Australia and Britain, of course, because it's an English-language program about the paranormal, which has always been sort of by interest of mine.
Yeah, I mean, you were doing it way before Art Bell was. And, in fact, when Art Bell retired, you're the first person that Premier came to fill in, right? I mean, to do the program, right?
That's true.
The national program.
I did that for a long time.
Uh-huh.
And so I do this program, and then I write columns for Fate Magazine. And I'm also the...
What is Fate Magazine, just in a nutshell?
Well, Fate Magazine has been around for 55 years, 60 years, actually, 60 years. They're celebrating 60 years now. They were one of the very earliest that specialized in this area of the paranormal, which is UFOs and crop circles and fairies and ghosts and all that sort of thing. And
real fairies? San Francisco fairies or no?
We're talking about mystical fairies.
Like tooth fairies.
Yeah, you go.
Okay.
Well, it's an angels.
Someone told me once when I was a junior high kid. He said, if anybody ever calls you a fairy, say poof, you're a pile of bleep. You know. So. By the way, we have two callers here. I don't want to interrupt you. I want you to finish your thought. But there's Bill on Highway 1 about the recent interview with Paul. It says Ringo, but it's not Paul and Ringo. It's Paul and George.
Right.
And John on the summit wants to either ask or tell what started talk radio. You want to talk to either of these guys? Or?
Yeah, but I'm going to have to bow out at the end of the hour.
Yes, sir. Okay. But I didn't want you hadn't finished what you were saying right now.
I lost my train of thought, Michael.
Yeah,
what were you talking about?
I was doing.
Yeah. And I also do a lot of commercial work. For example, I'm the voice of Bay Alarm. And I've done that for a number of years. So, you know, I keep my fingers in the pot and I try not to do too much, but enough to keep myself happy.
Yeah, great.
Just like Paul McCartney. I try to keep myself happy.
And that was a great happiness, being able to do what you want to do.
Exactly.
God, that says it all.
Yeah.
Okay,
sure.
Let's go to our first caller of the Saturday special, Bill on Highway 1. Welcome to the Saturday special with MZ and Hilly.
Thank you. It's been a great show, and I really enjoyed it. What I was talking about was a recent television interview I saw with Paul and Ringo. I forget the host, but they were absolutely brilliant. And they were being asked all these softball questions, and they just became very sarcastic and were able to just, you know, show their intelligence and that they wouldn't put up with any softball questions and wouldn't give the answers the interviewer wanted. And they just parried off each other, even at
the age. Wait a minute. When you talk about an interviewer giving softball questions, that doesn't indicate to me that it's a soft. Interviewers who want people to say what they want to say are sort of manipulative people who don't really throw softball questions. They throw hardball questions, I would think.
Right. What I'm saying is that they were just absolutely brilliant. They. When they were asked an obvious question, they wouldn't give the obvious answer. They would just play it back off the host. And I thought that your interview that you played showed that you weren't doing that. You were asking.
I think what you're pointing out here is that these guys really are pretty bright.
Oh yes,
they were educated.
Absolutely.
And you have to be in order to be that successful.
Not only successful, but, I mean, innovative. That's what blows me away about the people. Look, I'm sure Charlie was pulling my chain, our host in the afternoon drive. He hates the Beatles, and I said, you're crazy. No one hates the Beatles when I was promoting this show. And I hung up, and I was astounded at how many people called in and said, yeah, you're right, Charlie, the Beatles are not, I don't like them either. You know, how can anybody not like the Beatles? How can anybody not like the Beatles? Nobody can not like the Beatles unless they're just, you know, this is a joke, right?
Well, I used to do that. Like on New Year's Eve, if I was doing a show, nobody was there to call in. So I'd say, you know, the thing everybody says is don't drink and drive. I think they should go ahead and drink and drive and kill each other off.
And then the phones rang.
And then the board lit up.
I gotcha. Yeah.
So sometimes you do that to get calls.
Highway 1, Bill, thanks for your call.
Thank you for the show.
Okay, here's John on the summit. You're talking to Hilly Rose and MZ on KSCO Saturday Special.
Wow, Hilly Rose, a legend. Michael, thank you for letting me speak to a legend.
You bet.
My long time here.
My pleasure. I thank me too.
Well, that's very kind of you. I hate to be a legend. That means I'm old.
Well, you're 43 plus. You had to be at least 20.
Yeah. So. True. You do the math.
Yes. When I was going through my puberty renaissance, becoming an adult around 18 or whatever, I turned off the rock station and turned on, I think, KGO at the time. And there's this guy, Ari Blue, just out of the blue, as you will. And I remember the California girl, the guy who stopped talking politics, started talking sex. I remember that. But who really, can you really pinpoint who really started talk radio?
Oh, yeah, I wrote a whole book on that. The book was published back in 1980-something. It's called But That's Not What I Called About.
What a great title. What a great title.
The guy who started it was back in New York, And there were two or three there was that started just about the same time. It was right after the Second World War, and I can't think of his name right now. I know Bob Grant, who's still on the radio in New York, was one of the very first, but he wasn't the first. So it was just a matter of you know who was around at the time that wasn't serving the military, and they wanted to fill some airtime, and this guy did shows. But as I pointed out, there was no tape delay at that time, so these kinds of talk shows were sort of strange.
Oh, I would imagine.
Hilly, I know you're not talking about Ed McLaughlin, but isn't he the guy who's generally credited with bringing talk radio to as a format to the industry?
No, actually.
No?
Well, of course, he started Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah.
And he was involved here locally.
Yeah, at KGO. He was the general manager.
KABC in Los Angeles was a full-time talk station long before they did talk here.
Okay. Well,
he was one of the earliest, uh-huh. One of the first.
I'll be darned. And Jim Dunbar, I know, was way back in the beginning, you know, because I can remember listening to Dunbar back in 62 or so, you know, on KGO, or maybe early 63.
Yeah, have we got, let me clear my throat. Have we got time for me to tell you why Ira Blue got the show that he got and I didn't?
Yeah, we have 3.5 minutes till the top of the hour.
Well, you remember Ira Blue was doing a show out of The Hungry Eye.
Yes.
And Jim was the program director at KGO.
Yes.
And I wanted to audition for the job. And he said, well, do me a favor, produce the show for all of you. And when Ira is auditioning, and then I'll let you do the show on Monday. So on Friday before the Monday, they announced that Ira Blue had got the show. But I did the show on Monday night. And then who was the guy that was leaving the show? Do you remember?
No.
Well, the guy that left the show went on to do ABC Network Late Night Show. Can't think of his name.
Not Tom Snyder.
Yeah, they were the shows from The Hungry Eye. Ira did not start the show with The Hungry Eye.
Oh.
Anyway, to make a long story short, Enrico Banducci and this guy and everybody said, Hilly Rose should have gotten this show, but Rose turned to Blue because they had already announced it.
Oh.
And because I did Jim Dunbar a favor, I lost the show.
Oh, geez.
Otherwise, I'd have been Ira Blue.
Wow.
There you go.
And Hilly, I remember you as being not happy-go-lucky, but easy to listen to. You didn't insult people, and I remember turning on it quite a few times.
Well, that's very kind of you. Appreciate that. And, of course, I had a lot of listeners here even when I was down in Los Angeles. So it's a strange world. The thing that I like most is people who say, I used to listen to you when I was going to school. You filled my world. You know, you made me happy. And like Paul McCartney, that's the joy of the business. Make people happy. Make yourself happy.
Exactly. Oh, that's great. Hey, John at the Summit, thanks for your call here, okay?
Thank you for the opportunity.
We'll take one other call while we have Hilly Rose on. That would be from Scott in Scotts Valley. Hey, Scott, you're on the air.
Hilly Rose. That was absolutely the best interview I've ever heard with the Beatles or with any superstar, you know, where they could just get a chance to take a breath and say, hey, I'm just a musician, I'm not a role model.
Yeah.
That was very, very touching, you know, and also the beauty of it that Paul and George gave the interview and that John was flushing the toilet, it's so telling. You know, also, Michael, I wanted to say what John said during that People's Park demonstration was kind of strange. I was there, you know, with my family,
yeah.
And there was no risk of death. Nobody got killed. My dad.
Yeah. Well, James Rector got killed.
Oh, someone did.
Yeah.
That.
Don't you? There was exactly one death from the not the police, but the National Guard.
Oh, the police severely. Yeah. Oakland police severely beat my dad.
Yeah.
He had bruises 2 and 3 feet in diameter. They destroyed his Leica in film. But what I was amazed is how highly organized it was. The police would come and they'd tear up the sod and they'd tear up the plants. And another truckload of sod and plants was right behind it.
I hate to do this, Scott, but we're right at the top of the hour. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Hilly.
We know you got to run. We appreciate it. It's KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey.
Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki tries to rout out rival Shia leader Muqtada al-Sadr's Mahdi army from control of the southern oil capital of Basra. Hundreds dead this week. Fierce Mahdi army resistance. First U.S. air support and now British support for the Iraqi troops.
This is significant that the British, I think, from their positions outside the city are now firing artillery shells in support of the Iraqi army. The coalition forces being drawn into this battle a little bit more. And initially, you'll recall, this battle was portrayed as the Iraqi army against these Shia militias. It looks like more and more the coalition are being drawn into the fight.
Fox's David McDougall in Baghdad. The British handed over control of Basra security to the Iraqis earlier this year. In Baghdad, where there's also fighting involving U.S. troops, two American soldiers have been killed. Pennsylvania, the Democratic presidential battleground. From America's election headquarters, Barack Obama now on a six-day tour of Pennsylvania, hoping to cut Hillary Clinton's current estimated 12-point lead there to single digits by the time the primary rolls around April 22nd, delivering a dig at Clinton.
We're not going to take money from federal lobbyists. Senator Clinton has taken more than anybody, Democratic or Republican, because she doesn't think that's part of the problem. I think it's central to the problem.
Obama in Johnstown. Clinton with one part of her economic plan.
We are going to go right at all of the tax giveaways and the special breaks that have been given to the friends and supporters and allies and special interests of this administration.
Clinton campaigning in Indianapolis. A new study from cardiologists in Chicago suggests it may be safe for small hospitals to carry out angioplasty procedures, implanting heart stents, even if the hospital doesn't have a heart surgeon on hand who can operate if something goes wrong. You're listening to Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Warming, cool change.
Something as simple as washing your clothes, with just a few adjustments to your routine, can make a difference on our environment.
60% of the energy associated with a piece of clothing is spent in washing and drying.
For instance, over its lifetime, a t-shirt can add up to 9 pounds of carbon dioxide in the air.
What can you do? Wash your clothes in warm instead of hot water.
Save your laundry so you can do fewer and bigger loads instead of many small ones.
Use machines that are as energy efficient as possible.
Some of the newer ones can use as little as a fourth of the energy of older machines.
When you finish the wash, consider the almost lost art of hanging your clothes on a line rather than just loading them in the machine.
You might not be able to do it every time, but you can make an effort.
And you can make a difference.
More tips to combat global warming with a cool change are ahead on Fox News Talk.
The economy, the focus of the dueling Saturday radio speeches, though today it was two-part harmony. President Bush talking up the coming tax rebates.
Over the past few weeks, many Americans have received a letter from the IRS with some good news. The letters explain that millions of individuals and families will soon be receiving tax rebates thanks to the economic growth package that Congress passed and I signed into law last month.
For the Democrats, Congressman Bill Foster with reassuring words as well on efforts to calm the unstable housing market.
Democrats will work with our colleagues to bring about these solutions, to get our economy moving again, and give middle-class families the relief they need. And we hope to work with Republicans and with President Bush to give the American people the bipartisan solutions they demand and deserve.
There's a whole new Bush administration plan for regulation of the financial industry in the works, although some of it reportedly actually calls for less regulation. It's to be announced on Wednesday. Well, first foreign journalists, now diplomats. China letting outsiders eyeball the situation in Tibet.
The Dalai Lama made his call for the international community to work to stop the turmoil in Tibet, saying his people need their support. Diplomats from 15 embassies, including those of the U.S., Britain, France, and Japan, did get to the Tibetan capital Lhasa today for a one-day tour. One diplomat said they'd gotten assurances that the monks wouldn't be punished, but admitted it was a highly managed visit and had not met their request for unfettered access. Beijing says rioters killed 18 innocent civilians and two police officers during the 2 weeks of violence. Exiled Tibetan leaders have put the death toll from the Chinese crackdown at between 135 and 140. In the Asia Bureau, David Piper, Fox News Radio.
The gray wolf, no longer considered an endangered species, protection lifted on Friday in Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana, and hunts are already in the works to reduce the gray wolf population. I'm Chris Stanley, Fox News Radio.
Good morning, everyone. You're listening to KSCO 1080 on this Saturday, March 29th. I'm Nikki James. I've got your Central Coast weather outlook. Today, it's going to be mostly cloudy with a high near 62. The north-northwest wind will be between 10 and 13 miles per hour. And tonight, it'll be mostly cloudy with a low of 43 degrees. The wind will be 7 and 13 miles per hour. Sunday, mostly sunny skies with a high of 63 degrees. And your Monterey Bay boaters forecast for today, the northwest winds will be 5 to 10 knots. The wind waves, 1 foot or less. The northwest swell will be 3 to 7 feet at 9 seconds. And tonight, northwest winds 10 to 15 knots, decreasing to 5 knots after midnight. The wind waves will be 1 to 2 feet, and the northwest swell 4 to 8 feet at 9 seconds. All right, let's see. I've got a few traffic collisions to report, actually, for you. There is a traffic collision at Holiday and Shady Lane in Hollister-Gilroy. PG&E is showing up on that scene, and there is a pole down, a collision into a pole. And there is an ambulance responding to the traffic collision on the 14th, just east of Bryson and Hesperia Road in Kings City. Another traffic collision with an ambulance responding at State Route 129 just east of Rogue Lane. There is some major, basically the traffic's not really moving. I got a call recently about that. Traffic collision, no injuries at the 20 and State Route 68 in Monterey. Ambulance responding to another traffic collision at Capitola Road at Schooner Court in Santa Cruz. And both lanes, let's see, there's one lane that's open, it looks like. And the traffic collision at US 101 at State Route 152 in Hollister-Gilroy. There aren't any details about that, but that is reported. It is 57 degrees here at KSCO Studios. The official time is 11:07 and 8 seconds. You're turned into KSCO 1080. I'm Nikki James, and let's get back to the Saturday special, the second hour, with your host, MZ.
Results in weight loss. And now, there is a special offer that I want to make available for folks
We've got me on. Jeez, what's going on here? I'm all discombobulated. That was a pretty cool first hour, huh?
I liked it.
Yeah.
Very much.
With the interview with two of the Beatles, you know, from Hillary the Fantastic.
It was great.
And I told you at the beginning of the program that I was upset about three things.
Yes.
I'm not upset about anything now because over the break I took a phone call. I never answer the phone because, you know, you do that.
Yeah.
But you were on the air, so
I
had to answer the phone.
Thank
I didn't
you.
Want the call to get away.
Awesome.
And the caller, I'm so excited about the caller.
Okay.
I'm so excited about the caller. Okay,
let's
but right now
going.
Let's start the program
in
the traditional. You know what I need to do? I need to stop iTunes here. Yeah, that's what I need to do. I need to get rid of that so that I can start the program in the normal way. This way. Back in the 60s and early 70s, there was a TV station that was always on the top with the local news.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really gotta go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
And anybody around here, you know, who lived here then, you know, knows that I'm talking about KGO TV, Channel 7, right? And for the longest time, I mean, it was like unprecedented, almost like today with KGO Radio being number one in its radio market for, I think, you know, 110 consecutive, you know, quarterly books, which is something like 29 years. I don't even more than that now. For KGO TV to be on the top with their local news for as long as it was, and I know it was years. I don't know exactly how many years. And the guy who did that was named Van Amberg. And I have a place in the Bay Area, and I go to I went to get my hair cut one day, and I was explaining to the barber, who, you know, barbers talk, right? They say, you know, great conversationalists. What do you do? I own a radio station in Santa Cruz. Oh, that's sort of interesting. Yeah, Van Amberg is a patron here, you know. And I said, oh my God, give him my card. Give him my card when he comes in. I want to interview him. Anyhow, I was trying for a long, long time to get Van Amberg. And guess who we have? Guess who we have? You think I'm kidding, huh? Hey, Van?
Yeah.
Thanks for calling KSCO. I decided it was worth a chance. You were kind enough to respond to by sending me an email a few months ago, and you've sort of not been on the air a lot for a long, long time. And thanks for calling, because I've always wanted to interview you.
Yeah, I think the last time I was on the air was with Ron Owens. Oh, it's quite, oh gosh, it's been a few years now, but we were doing a thing at the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, and we wanted to promote it, and so I went over and did a little thing there. But yeah, it's true, I haven't been on, but it's interesting listening, just sitting here listening just now about the traffic patterns in the Salinas Valley. In 1959, I was at KSBW, and I did both radio and TV for John Cohen
right.
at that time.
Uh-huh.
And we were always at odds and stuff because I had my own ideas about what kind of music I wanted to play and all of that. And Foy Willing, who was the head of the Sons of the Pioneers, the singing group. I don't know if you even remember that.
No, but, I don't remember that.
Okay, but, yeah. Foy Willing was a big star, and John Cohen brought him in as general manager.
Oh.
And Foy and I didn't get along at all. So I'm coming up for vacation, and I'm not making any money. We have three children, and my wife and I have decided that we're going to leave Salinas. Because it's just, we're number one. We were number one at that time.
Now, there was a KSBW radio and KSBW TV. No, that was
yeah, they were in the same building on John Street there. And I don't know.
It's KSBW is still, TV is still located at 238 John Street.
I'll be darned. Same old studios then.
Well, I think they're updated a little bit. But
yeah. Well, it was funny because I went in and said, that I want to take my, I need my check in advance, my vacation check in advance. And Foy Willing looked at me and he said, closed the door and said, look, I'll give you your vacation check in advance if you promise never to come back. And he didn't know that we had already packed and we were going to L.A. I get a phone call when I got home from San Francisco saying, hey, we're really interested in you at Channel 5. And so in just that short period of time, I went from KSBW to KPIX.
Wow.
As sports and special events director.
Uh-huh.
And so I was at KPIX. Now, you had Hilly Rose on. I listened to just a tiny part of that.
Uh-huh.
But in 65, I was on KFRC radio. By this time, I had been fired again, and I left KPIX, and I'm over at KFRC doing the morning show.
Uh-huh.
And the Beatles come to town, and the Hilton. And I'll never forget that because it was, you know, it was a big deal. And the town went crazy, and Hilly did get that exclusive interview when they were out at the at Candlestick. And so anyway, I'm just going back over
So you've been in radio and TV. You started in radio, I presume, right? Because most
started
TV
in radio
guys did, right?
At KYOS, but I really got started at the top, to tell you the truth. I was at SF State. I was graduating from SF State, and I got chosen as one of five seniors across the country who would work with the NBC Radio and Television Network to do the 56th convention at the Cow Palace for the Republicans, the Republican convention.
Right.
And I was going to be, I simply was a guy who would go get somebody when they were wanted on the phone, because in those days you didn't have cell phones or any of that. So we had a phone bank. And I was also going to doing one last class in summer school, and that put me late one day, and I got jumped on by Davidson Taylor, who was the vice president of public relations for NBC, and I fought back a little bit, thinking this was it. I had explained to everybody I was going to be late and all this stuff. Anyway, he comes back to me in the afternoon and said, "We're no longer going to use you as a page," which is what I was doing. "We're going to send you to the airport, and we're giving you a fleet of new Oldsmobiles and a list of the NBC people who will be coming in from the convention in Chicago, and you will meet them, greet them, put them in their cars, get them to their hotels, da-da-da-da-da." So that sounded okay, so I go out to the airport, and in that thing I meet Huntley Brinkley, who had just been put together. And they're coming in from Chicago, and they had done well with the ratings, so they were very happy. And I get them in their cars and get them to their hotels and stuff. And the last person I meet is H.V. Kaltenborn, who at that time was the dean of commentators on radio and television. And he was in his 80s. He had just gotten back from Korea, where he flew in an F-80 jet. And, you know, just a really dynamic guy. But he was at the end of his career. Am I taking too long?
No. Okay. I'm glued. Come on.
Okay, the end of his career. And NBC, somebody in NBC had chosen to leave him out of the top hotels, and they had him at the Bellevue. So anyway, I have this list, and I said, "Oh, hi, Mr. Kaltenborn, Mrs. Kaltenborn, how are you? I said, Fred Van Amberg, and I'm your host and greeter, and I will be getting you a car. I have it waiting for you. I'll get you to the hotel. You're going to be at the Bellevue." And he stopped, and he said, "Bellevue? We stay at the Fairmont." And he said, "And you get us, you make sure we're not getting in that car until we're at the Fairmont." Because he knew what was going on, too, and he wasn't going to have any part of it. So I said, "Oh, my God, well, let me make a call." I just cold called the Fairmont, and it so happens that a guy in one of my classes at SF State was working the desk. I mean, how does that happen? And he's got an opening. So he says, "I've got an opening, and tell Mr. and Mrs. Kaltenborn they can have it," and I in the NBC thing. And I said, "Okay." So I walked back out there, and I said, I've set it up. Everything's fine. Here's your car. Brand new Oldsmobile. Take Mr. and Mrs. Kaltenborn to the Fairmont." And the driver did. And that was it. So I ended my thing. I was going back as a page the next day. Davidson Taylor comes back again and says, "I want to talk to you." I said, "Oh, God, what did I do now?" And I go over with him, and he said, "Mr. Kaltenborn has asked you to be his assistant for the convention." Now, that I was not in the broadcast area. I was a page at the telephone bank. I walked into the broadcast area, into the main studios. Here's Huntley Brinkley sitting there and all the correspondents, and here's H.V. Kaltenborn with his own cubicle, and he goes on both radio and television. And so I worked with him for the convention. At the end of it, he gave me one of the only letters of recommendation he's ever given, and I used that to get my first job at 5,000-watt KYOS in Merced. So there you are.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Van, you know, I how long were you number one in the Bay Area on the station that some people call Killing Guts and Orgasm?
Well, you know, it's interesting. And this is not bragging, a little bit maybe. I was number one in everything I did in the Bay Area. I was number one at Channel 5. we killed everybody on the 11 o'clock show at Channel 5 way before Channel 7 at that time was another competitor. Roger Grimsby, as a matter of fact, was on Channel 7.
Good evening. I'm Roger Grimsby. Here are all the news. Yeah.
And I left KPIX, number one, went to KFRC, raised the ratings in the morning against Sherwood on KFRC, and at the end of the year, when they didn't come through with what they had told me they were going to come through with, I left KFRC and went freelance.
Uh-huh.
And then I did documentaries and stuff like that, and I ended up on what was the name of the I can't even remember, the KEWB.
Yeah.
Over in Oakland.
Uh-huh.
And we had Radio Free Oakland, and I started a talk show, which went number one. And they had Joe Dolan in the morning. I followed Joe Dolan. They had all this stuff. Anyway, while I'm doing that, ABC comes after me to go to Channel 7. And I go to Channel 7, and I'm reporting while I'm doing my talk show.
Yeah.
And while I'm doing my talk show, I sign a deal with the Raiders to do the broadcast for the Oakland Raiders. So that I'm doing all these things. And I end up in 1969, I decided to leave KEWB, and I go over to Channel 7 full-time, take over the weekends on Channel 7 in 69, and then in 70, I took over the newscast. And within 6 months, we were number one at 11. And then we
now, was fought. It you and Jerry Jensen back then, or did
Jerry
he come later? Uh-huh.
Jerry Jensen? No, uh-huh. Jerry. Well, first, when I first went on, it wasn't Jerry Jensen, but then Jerry came into it about 4 or 5 months into it after I'd started it. So, and then they brought in Pete Giddings and John O'Reilly and that. So, anyway, that's within 6 months we were number one, and then we started fighting to become number one in the early evening. But we didn't have a 6 o'clock show; we had a 4:30 show.
Right.
And that's why Ray Tannehill had walked out and gave me my opportunity to become the anchor.
Uh-huh.
Ray Tannehill was the anchor, but he decided in his mind, and he had gotten a good offer to go home to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which is where he was from.
Uh-huh.
And he just one day, I'm sitting at my reporting desk, and he came over and said, "Are you ready to go on?" And I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, I'm leaving, and you're the only one who's going to be here when 6 o'clock comes." Because what
just
they were
like
gonna,
that, with no notice?
Absolutely. It
yeah.
was 6 o'clock.
I thought that only happened around here.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
No, that's what happened. And so I took over. I don't know if he had talked to management about it or not, but that he was telling me personally that they had said, okay, if you do, I guess, then we'll have to put Van on.
Right.
Van will be on tonight.
In a nutshell, can you tell, I never understood why you just were there one day and you were gone the next. And what I recall, it wasn't for lower ratings or anything like that.
No, we were number
radio,
one.
Radio and television stations don't send someone away when they're on top.
No, they do.
They do
in this day and age. I'll tell you what's interesting. Cap Cities had bought ABC by that time, and Cap Cities wasn't going to keep ABC. They were going to sell off what they could, do all this, and then finally get rid of it. But they had to make the bottom line look good to Wall Street. They were a Wall Street group.
Uh-huh.
And the way to do that is to cut salaries and to cut staff, and then they can make it look good. As you know, Cap Cities then sold to Disney.
Yeah.
They were
Disney sold to Citadel.
Citadel, yeah. I think Disney still owns the television, don't they?
Right, yeah,
yeah,
that's true.
I'm not sure.
They sold ABC Radio to Citadel.
Citadel.
And my understanding is that whole thing is sort of melting down right now. I mean, but anyhow, whatever.
Yeah, well, that's what happened there. I was just called in and told I still had 6 months to go on my contract, and I was called in and told that I had to take a massive cut in pay, and I could no longer be a factor or force in the newsroom. I was managing editor.
Right.
And so I was making a lot of waves because I didn't like the way the news was going. they looked at it and said, well, you've been sued by these people and this, and, you know, we won every lawsuit and all that, but still, that's corporate.
Yeah.
They didn't want it.
Wow.
And so, well, and I think I was the first one that they totally erased. I mean, it was just like an eraser was taken, and I didn't exist.
I've never seen or heard anything like it before or since. But with your permission, I would like to set up a time that we can, where we can promo it ahead of time, you know, where I'd like to sit down and do an interview with you where we can have some caller interaction and so forth. Is that okay? So
well,
I'm putting you on the spot. Huh?
Yeah, I told you before that I certainly would consider it. What the problem is, I'm not in the state. I'm going a lot of places, and
well, there are things called cell phones.
Yeah, no, that's true. I just ran over mine.
All right. Okay. Hey, Greg. Well, I'll be in touch with you on the email. And thanks very much for calling in.
Okay.
Yeah, Van Amberg, appreciate it. And
thank you.
We'll talk to you again. Take care.
Bye bye.
It is 11:25. I promoed the latest, newest Kay's commentary here. It was going to be on about 20 minutes ago, but it ain't every day that you get a phone call from Van Amberg himself here. So we took the liberty to change things around a little bit. But now let's do it. Take it away, Nikki.
The following is a KSCO commentary. Here is Kay's Whirling.
Much of the following thoughts were suggested by my bright and concerned friend Zoltán Egerisi, who left his native Hungary and family at the age of 18, feeling he could no longer live in an oppressive communist community. This commentary is called Nobel Prize for Fraud. For many years, a Nobel Peace Prize has been bestowed upon the best and the brightest. Some of these prizes were given for the right reasons to the right individuals, say for medicine, economics, inventions, or whatever makes human life better. In recent years, the Nobel Peace Prize has become more often a political joke for promoting international socialism, the UN, and the new European Union's public political agenda. Yasser Arafat, the inventor of airline hijacking, received a peace prize for promoting peace in the Middle East, which has been a total failure. Arafat, the Middle East's biggest corrupt leader, stashed away over $10 million in Swiss accounts so the useful idiots in Palestine could keep on rioting about property and especially about the existence of the State of Israel. Along came Kofi Annan, the UN's General Secretary, who received a Peace Prize for organizing the UN to be a more efficient, accountable organization. Oh, sure. This was nothing more than the biggest bold-faced lie. During the reign of this Nobel Prize international mafia don of the UN, he managed to swindle more than $24 billion with a B from the Iraqi people using the Food for Oil scam to move money into the coffers of the UN's socialist lawyers. The moral of this story is, if you steal, steal big, then nobody will put you in jail. You get more jail time stealing a car than for stealing a multi-billion dollar fraud. Some of Kofi Annan's people did receive some jail time. Others hid behind diplomatic immunity, but nothing happened to Kofi Annan. The UN must have a more transparent and clear accounting system and be accountable to all member countries. If not, the U.S. should just get out of this socialist cesspool. For years, I wanted our country to remove itself from this corrupt, self-serving group whose only agenda is to rule the globe and subordinate all the countries under their rule. Along comes the latest fraud, Al Gore, the new high priest of the global warming scam, trying to scare the uninformed. He was given a peace prize for what? It should have been called Nobel Prize for the Biggest Lie. This global warming garbage is nothing more than a fake for the UN to come up with an international tax system collected on energy, energy use, and the ability to control other nations through the UN's dictatorship. the UN received 51 prostituted votes from liberal climate scientists on the left and on government payroll during the Paris Climate Conference. Yet it ignored 400 plus other scientists who dispute that CO2 or man is the cause of global warming. That is nonsense. The UN is after taxes again. They blame the USA and people who could be taxed and leached upon, while their communist friends in China, India, or South Korea can pollute the air all day and all night. Yeah, the capitalist smoke really bothers them, but not the marijuana smoke, first or second hand. 15,000 global warming jihadists, the environmental activists, with their chief alarmist, Al Gore, met in the tropical Bali, Indonesia, a while ago to urge all nations to hurry up and sign the new treaty. It's like bank robbers. Hurry up before they find out that we have looted them. The media continues to neglect to mention that President Bush will not sign the Kyoto agreements because the world's worst polluters, China and India, are exempt from cleaning up their filth. Who do you think paid for this nice winter vacation for most of the delegates? The UN, from money they collected for the Indonesian tsunami victims. They collected over $1 billion, gave out less than $100 million, so they're having a good time on your feel-good donation. The UN also wants to hijack the internet domain registration control from the U.S. so countries like Russia, China, Iran, Venezuela, and others could block internet traffic not approved by dictators. The UN, under the LOST treaty, wants to control the seas all around the world and the minerals and oil in the seabeds, tax the resources, and distribute it among third world countries. The Robin Hoods of New York, the UN, will get a very handsome commission, plus controlling where our Navy can sail or not sail. We're totally sick of this UN mafia. Kudos to you, Zoltan, for shining a light on much of this important information. Isn't it time for we the people to direct our government to resign from the UN, which we have tolerated and subsidized for more than 60 years? They routinely veto whatever our representatives recommend and have leached upon us long enough. Clearly their agenda is to rule the world. America, please wake up before it's too late. For KSCO and KOMY, this is Kay Swirling.
Welcome back to the second hour of the KSCO Saturday Special. I think that was the world premiere of that Kay's commentary. Am I right, or did that run before? Nikki, do you know?
Not first sure. Debut.
Okay, cool. So if you missed it, you'll be able to hear it again. I don't know when, not on this program, but definitely there will be plenty of chances. If you want to call us, it's an open mic program, although we do have a guest now in the studio, another good friend of mine, none other than... Well, Richard Schmaltz. Hi, Richard. How are you?
Very fine, Michael. How are you today?
Richard's my tax accountant here, and he's a good friend from, a good 33 years ago when you and I and Brother Lou and two or three other people were partners in a scuba diving boat.
We were, along with Ace Meehan.
Ace Meehan, who used to live three or four doors down from here. Yeah, what a
and
great
time. And we used to go ab diving up at Scott Creek.
Yeah, and we had that little Campari, you know, like Zodiac type
boat. It was a Zodiac
boat
with a 5-horse, and it got all of us in it, and we pumped it up on the beach.
And not a weekend would go by but for us 20 and 30-something-year-old guys.
Gung-ho, jumping in the cold water.
Oh, yeah. And then I made the mistake of going scuba diving in Grand Cayman in the warm water with 6 pounds of weight and no wetsuit. And after that, I don't think I ever went diving in Monterey Bay.
That's true for me, too. I discovered the Caribbean. I never came back here.
Oh, my gosh.
I got rid of my gear.
Listen, before we get into our interview with you that I've wanted to get on KSCO for a long, long time, and here it is, all, 17 and a half years, we really need to play some commercials. So, Nikki, that's your cue. Take it away. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Stay with us. There's a good rest of the program ahead.
For several months now, you've heard the commercials for Santa Cruz Tile and Stone here on KSCO. Now you can go to the KSCO.com website and click on the yellow box and see their fabulous showroom and their great products and services. If you're thinking about a remodel or new kitchen, entryway, or bathroom, then you need to visit Santa Cruz Tile and Stone, located at 1800 Soquel Avenue, number 2 in Santa Cruz. You'll find full and prefabricated slabs in granite, marble, limestone, and travertine at great prices. And you'll also find Santa Cruz Tile and Stone, Phoenix Spas, and Gazebos at the lowest prices in Santa Cruz County. And remember, Phoenix Spas and Gazebos are the only ones built in Northern California. Santa Cruz Tile and Stone is open Monday through Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Let the expert staff at Santa Cruz Tile and Stone work with you to design your remodel or your new construction project. Santa Cruz Tile and Stone, located at 1800 Soquel Avenue, unit number 2 in Santa Cruz. Phone 421-0292 or visit them by going to KSCO.com and click on the yellow box. Santa Cruz Tile and Stone.
So the other day, I'm cruising in my Hummer. I see these dogs doing that meet and greet, circle and sniff thing. Hey, how you doing? Come here often? Yeah, all the time. And those dogs got me thinking. I don't want some guy sniffing around my Hummer telling me what it needs, like an oil change every 3,000 miles. My Hummer dealer clued me in on that one. Most newer Hummers, like mine, have an oil life monitor that tells me when it's time for a change. With OnStar, I can subscribe and get a diagnostic report via email. And I always check my owner's manual for a complete maintenance schedule. And when it's the right time for me, I choose the Hummer experts down the Goodrich service lane.
I can't stop thinking about it.
I got an oil change, tire rotation, and a Goodrich multi-point vehicle inspection. These guys know more about my Hummer than anyone. And for me, that's the best deal of all.
See your Hummer Goodrich dealer today or log on to Goodrich.com. Diagnostic capabilities vary by model. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations. Goodrich and go. We're keeping it simple.
Get more for your money. Much more when you think local first. Listen to how much more your friends and neighbors get for their money when they shop the locally owned independent businesses of Santa Cruz County.
I try to go to farmers markets. My name's Kelly. I try to go to small businesses that have higher quality food and that I can trust.
My name's Chris, and I always shop local stores because of the books. Just are really well chosen, and there's always something new, and I can even walk through the store and learn a lot without even buying a book. But I actually do buy books too. I mean, some of these books I can get at some other chain store, but I can get them as easily here. And then many others, like the way they feature their books and the kind of selection that they do, I don't think you find that at some other chain store. It's all novels down here.
Get more for your money. Think first of the locally owned independent businesses of Santa Cruz County. For a list of local businesses or for membership information in Think Local First, visit thinklocalsantacruz.org. That's thinklocalsantacruz.org. Life's pretty good, business is great, and people are wonderful. There's so much more to life than a subprime loan mess. We live in a place many others can only visit. Randy Turnquist understands that. There are buyers who are buying and sellers who are selling. If you need help buying or selling a home or just have questions about your situation, give Randy a call at 831-566-2590 or toll-free 888-496-9655 or visit KSCO.com and search for Realtor.
My friends laughed at me when I said I could order in French, but when the waiter came, I just smiled and said, Je voudrais le poulet et le riz.
Discover the world's fastest way to learn a language, guaranteed. It's the amazing Rosetta Stone software, and you can try it free. Request a free demo CD-ROM by calling 1-800-349-5311. There's no tedious translation, useless memorization, or boring drills. Call 1-800-349-5311. 1-800-349-5311.
The first time I felt it, the second time I loved it, and the third time I told all my friends. Of course, I'm talking about ACT, the new feel-good energy drink. ACT is all natural, made with vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and antioxidants, so you get the energy you want without the junk that's in those other drinks. ACT feeds your cells, works in 5 to 10 minutes, and lasts for up to 6 hours with no jitters and no crash. You'll feel great all day, just like I did. People from 12 to 80 love ACT. Whether you want your kid drinking a healthier alternative or you're 80 years old and want more get up and go, ACT is diabetic friendly and fits in great with any diet and fitness plan. While you may have seen ACT at various retail locations around town, to buy at a discount or for a free sample, call me, Robin, at 831-818-4144. That's 831-818-4144. or send me an email, robin@ksco.com. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back to the KSCO Saturday Special on your favorite radio station. That's AM 1080 KSCO, where the time is 21 minutes before noontime. If you want to call us, the phone number is 479-1080. We started out being an open mic program, but I'll be darned if we didn't, if it didn't sort of evolve into having some really special guests, including right now, Richard Schmaltz, who was an ex-diving buddy of mine, good friend, and back in 1978. I knew that my diving buddy friend was a tax guy who prepares taxes. And I always did my own taxes up until then, but I had sort of a dramatic increase in my income that particular year because I had gone into the video business and I don't know, something clicked and I started getting a lot of business from government agencies to make video productions for them to, you know, train their staff and promote their, you know, projects and things. And so I needed some extra guidance. So I went to Richard Schmaltz because he was the only person. You want to go to someone that you know and trust. I went to Richard Schmaltz and at his home office in Aptos, and I said, Richard, I need your help. And boy, did he help me. He told me all about income averaging. And he just took charge and made me feel just great and told me exactly what to do. And then I went and did it. And he said, well, wait a minute. Don't you want me to do your tax return? I said, no. What do I owe you for your advice? He said, well, here, you know, yeah, but I to do your tax return too. I said, no. I don't need to pay extra money to fill out a form and so forth. You gave me all the wonderful advice that I just needed. Thank you. Gladly paid him. And back then, boy, how things change. Because now I wouldn't think of doing my own tax return. I mean, it's well worth, especially if you got a guy like Richard who knows everything, and he don't cheat the government, and he don't cheat me. I mean, it's great, and he'll welcome to KSCO.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, and you do a lot more than taxes, and you don't do much diving anymore. But
I do in the Caribbean when I go down there. I was just at Utila. The island of Utila, off the Honduras, warm water.
What a life.
No wetsuit.
What a life you live, you know, while I have to rot here on the radio here, you know. So, but you know, though I've known you for so many years, just about every time I talk to you, I find out something else that I didn't know about you. I mean, you're a really multifaceted guy. I mean, and you don't like the politics that are going on in this country right now at all.
No, I don't.
Yeah. I don't think too many of us do, actually. So
no, we have kind of a leadership vacuum. It just seems to me.
Yeah. Yeah. You never liked Bush. And, you know, I'm not a real fan because the guy won't do anything about the borders, and he's definitely a globalist. And I know you've never liked Bush, but that wasn't the reason. I mean, the reason is because of the war, you know, involvement.
Yeah, I never liked the war idea. I don't think he's a good manager.
Uh-huh.
I don't think he's taken the steps needed for this economy. We're talking now in the last 6 months of being in office now, trying to do things about regulation and about economic solutions that are too little too late.
Yeah. Well, so are we in the worst shape that we've been in, you think, economically?
I mean, in my view, yes.
Uh-huh.
What I see across my desk is many self-employed people and small companies like yours.
Yeah,
you know,
most
that are
people don't
struggling.
People don't come to you to do their taxes, right? I mean, business people do, right? Entrepreneurs do. Isn't that a correct
statement?
That's
true. Entrepreneurs.
Yeah, where their taxes
business.
Are just a little too complicated to go for themselves or to go to H&R Block, so they come to you.
That's true.
Uh huh.
Or IRS problems.
Oh.
You know, audit, that kind of stuff.
If someone is being audited,
mm-hmm.
and they're not your client, they can come to you and you'll help them.
Yes.
I thought you only help people where you were involved in the.
No, I help them too. We're licensed to do that.
As an enrolled agent.
As an enrolled agent, yes. Uh-huh. And on staff as a former IRS agent locally here, and we take care of appellate cases when they get past Water Street,
uh-huh.
where they're not solvable or not solved at that time, we can take it up.
Wow. It's sort of interesting, satisfying work or high stress.
It is high stress. It's satisfying work, though, when we prevail.
Is it?
To help the client.
Oh, which is most of the time?
Helping them keep the money that they earned.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, you're an advocate for the, but you're not trying to screw the government out of money or anything. You just want to make sure that it's right. And if people don't realize all of the nuances, and nobody possibly can, I mean, it's got to be very difficult for you. You must go to school, I mean,
every year.
Continuing education to find out about the new things on the codes and so
forth. It is, every year. And then we're in the books, and then we have resources for research.
Huh.
All the time.
Yeah. So I can imagine, is it getting more stressful?
I think it is for us in the
because
business.
Because taxes are getting more complicated when they keep saying, every time there's some sort of an election year, there are some people out talking about a flat tax or doing away with the IRS entirely, like Ron Paul said recently.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's always talk of that, and it seems like when there's talk of that, and then there's some action, it even gets more complicated.
Yeah.
Do you notice that the book gets bigger?
Isn't that good for guys like you, though?
I mean, not really.
If they got rid of the IRS, I mean, what would you do? I mean, you'd do something else, I guess, right?
Yeah, something more productive, like helping people manage their companies, keep more of their money, be more efficient delivery.
Yeah.
There will always be some kind of taxes, though, I think, to pay for infrastructure, defense.
What do you believe personally?
Programs.
Do you think the IRS should be abolished? Before we talk about putting you on the spot.
Gee, what would I do? No, I don't think they should be abolished, but I sure think they could simplify the code. It's over the top. I go to the seminars every year, and, you know, we're sitting in a room full of guys trying to learn the new regs and stuff, and every year it's worse.
Uh-huh.
It's too complicated for the average guy, you know, to do, and that's not a fair system. It's not a transparent system.
It creates a whole new industry, too. Now,
it does.
One of my particular pet peeves is the pharmaceutical industry, you know. When just some basic understanding of nutrition and supplementation can prevent people from taking horrible, damaging, toxic prescription drugs, not only do they have more side effects that are oftentimes worse than the original malady or the disease or condition.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, but they're horrendously expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And that bothers me, but that's a whole huge part of the economy.
Yes, it is, and they have a very powerful lobby.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, what do you?
Well, organizations seem to perpetuate when they get big. They tend to get bigger. You know, the pharmacy industry has gotten bigger through the years, gotten strong.
Yeah.
The tax industry, I don't think that H&R Block and Jackson Hewitt, I don't think those people are pushing for more complexity at all. When I talk in these seminars, we talk about simplifying. We would love to have it easier. I would love to have those small individual wage earners doing their own taxes, make it simple.
Uh-huh.
For example, the earned income credit. I mean, you read that, it's tough. It's tough for us to understand it, and yet that's helping people that are, you know, maybe lesser educated people that have kids, working families. You know, it's tough. They have to have somebody like me interpret it. That doesn't make any sense.
What is counterproductive. Earned income credit for people who are below a certain
below
who
a
are
certain,
wage earners who are not entrepreneurs?
That's right. They're earning a living typically with kids, maybe a couple of earners, husband and wife, or maybe just one. Income below, you know, $38,000 or something, and on down. Get a kind of a reverse or a negative income tax.
Uh-huh.
Okay, it helps families, but, you know, to read the law, my goodness.
It's very complicated. It costs you more than the rebate to apply for it, probably, right?
Not really, but, you know, you're right. But you're still back to paying somebody to help you figure the darn thing out, you know.
Yeah, well, it shouldn't be that complicated. And that's what everybody says. Sort of like for 34 years now, people have been saying we've got to wean ourselves from dependence on foreign oil. Remember the gas lines in 1974?
I do.
You know, 34 years ago?
I was in that line.
Right, so was I.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was saying, oh, we've got to stop dependence on foreign oil. And look where we are 34 years later. They're saying the same thing. Why did nothing happen? Because, I don't know, what's people are just lazy. They just talk and then they forget about it. They're fickle.
We haven't made the cars terribly more efficient either. It was all talk of that.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of SUVs out there.
Yeah. So what are we going to, what can we do?
We as?
You and me and this station.
Oh, I think promote energy efficiency, you know, okay. More of that kind of stuff. Make it known about, well, the solar programs that are out there. We can do that another day.
Yeah.
There are energy programs.
Yeah, there's only 11 minutes left of the Saturday special. But in that time, if you want to, if you have a question for Richard here about taxes, it's a great time to call 479-1080. And you can talk to him. Now, apparently a caller didn't want to go on the air, wants to know what Rich's opinion of TurboTax is.
I think it's fine. They pay a fee. They can do it on the Internet, and or they can buy the disc. And I think it's fine for people doing it themselves at home. It has a review module in there. Ask them the questions. Kind of conducts the interview like I do.
Yeah, and you can buy it. What,
sure.
About 35.
I think
30
it's 39, isn't it?
Something
$39,
like that.
And then you got to double check that you get this California, because California doesn't shake hands with the federal, really.
So you have to buy two versions.
Well, you have to have the California module included, because they are not the same.
Right. Okay.
Fine. TurboTax is fine.
It looks like we got a couple callers anyhow.
Sure.
Again, 479-1080 is the phone number to call if you want to talk to tax accountant Richard Schmaltz, who's a really cool dude here into all kinds of other things besides taxes, but he can answer all your tax questions too. Is it Rory? Is this Rory or is it Roy?
No, it's Rory.
It's Rory. Hi, Rory. Welcome to KSCO. Here's Richard.
Thanks for having me on. Richard, real quick before my main question, what kind of music do you listen to?
Mostly jazz and Latin,
okay,
Brazilian jazz.
As long as it's not schmaltzy, right?
Schmaltzy. You know, I play schmaltzy music.
Do you?
I dance when I do it.
Oh, that's great.
I'm a schmaltzy guy.
That's great. Question,
uh-huh.
Alternative minimum tax.
Boy, it's a complicated deal. Yeah,
yeah. Where's that thing going? I mean, I've been hit with it the last couple of years. We've done our taxes ourselves with TurboTax for several years. You know, I don't have a business. I make a decent income, but
sure.
I think they're taxing me at a rural Arkansas.
That's
rate.
True. That's true. In California, we're kind of a different economy out here, aren't we? You know,
yeah.
Incomes are higher, houses are higher. It's
yeah,
a different world than Arkansas.
I got a lot of deduction. I happen to have 9 kids, and it doesn't help. Now some of them are getting off the deduction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're getting older and they're off the rolls, but
mm-hmm.
I at least have 8 this year, and I've been hit with it 2 years running.
I think you'll see the changes this year enacted to keep pace with the inflation that has occurred in the last couple of decades. Alternative minimum tax was passed to get those rich guys that didn't pay any tax.
Yeah,
well, it turns out that they haven't changed it to keep pace with these incomes that have been rising, so that people now that are in the middle class are looking like, in heretofore previous times, looking like wealthy people. So they're getting hit with it. The Congress is very aware of this, with letters from people like you and me that are making a big stink about it. It's falling on the wrong people, clearly.
Yeah.
You will see action this year.
Okay, my understanding is it was enacted late 60s.
Yes,
was never indexed.
No, it wasn't indexed. That's right.
And the net's been getting wider and wider. So.
That's correct. More and more people fall into it, and it was not intended that way. But you know, these are people that are passing laws that are not business people. They're attorneys and politicians, and they really don't grasp the end game of what they do and what they pass sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, that's good, Richard. So by this time next year...
Mm-hmm. You will see a change. You will see a change, and you heard it here.
Okay.
Hey, thanks, Roy, for your call to the Saturday special. That opens a line at 479-1080. It's AM 1080 KSCO, your favorite radio station. The Saturday special with MZ and tax-enrolled agent Richard Schmaltz. Gail, you're next on the Saturday special. Hey, Gail.
Hi.
Gail, you're on.
Hi.
Say something.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Hello, I'm calling because I've always filed my taxes as a single head of household.
Yes.
And for years. But last June I got married, and we were going to file separately.
Hmm.
And my tax person told me that I need to give my husband's name, birth date, and social security number. And after I got married, after June, I found out that due to his former marriage, they got in some trouble with the IRS, and the IRS came in and cleaned out his bank account. Well, I don't want to give the IRS his Social Security number, so should I get a divorce?
No, I wouldn't get a divorce.
Well, that's what my tax person told me to do. He said, Sue Gorman would love this. Divorce the guy and just live together.
I can't really advocate that. But...
Well, if you file separately, you still have to give the spouse's Social Security number, right?
Yeah, but that doesn't implicate you in their problems. That's why you file separately.
Yeah, and we even have a prenup so that our assets and debts and everything are completely separate. Mm-hmm. But my concern is that once the IRS dips into your bank account and cleans it out, then you're on the defensive. And I don't want to even take the chance of that happening.
To you. But they shouldn't be going after your account for his problems.
Yeah, it's separate. Okay.
It's separate.
And all right. Thank you for that answer. And my second question is, do you ever see that the IRS is going to turn around like China did and stop giving credits to people with a lot of children and instead start charging people for having so many children?
Great question.
That's a good question. And I don't see it.
Yeah, because that's not a problem here anymore. They don't talk about they talk about increased immigration, but they don't talk about people having more kids around here because that ain't happening, I don't think. Am I right?
No, it's actually slowed down.
Yeah.
Since the 50s.
Yeah, they don't talk about ZPG anymore, zero population growth, because but there is population growth because of other reasons.
It's not very high, isn't it, Mike? 2.1 or 2.2?
I'm not sure, but all the growth is as a result of not more birthing going on, but because of immigration. Most of it illegal.
That's right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Right, so, and once those children are born on American soil, then they get the deductions, right? They get credits, tax credits.
That's right.
You know, and I'm an advocate for zero population growth. And I think that we should probably start turning that around and charging people for having a lot of children. But,
wow, you would really penalize Rory. Because Rory has 9 youngsters.
And when I hear people like that bragging about that, I think, yeah, wait till the water wars start. But anyway, that's my opinion for the day, and thank you for taking my call.
That's a valid
okay.
opinion.
Yeah, like the gas war that I heard about on the news today. I mean, somewhere back east, you know, a gasoline station owner killed another one. It's sort of elevating into something. Anyhow, 479-1080. We got about 4 minutes left. If you have a tax question for Richard Schmaltz, give us a call. Joe and Salinas, you're on.
Yeah, I didn't quite understand when you said that the California didn't quite jive with the federal. Are you talking about when it comes to state?
No,
taxes?
It didn't jive with Arkansas, I think is what you were saying, right?
California law has some differences with respect to self-employed and depreciation, things like that.
In comparison to the Fed. So,
yeah, in other words, your
Joe heard you right, but I didn't, I guess.
Your California income often doesn't match the federal. For example, you get a state income tax refund. That's income for federal, not for state. State taxes are deductible on the federal return, but they're not deductible on the California return. There's a list of deductions and changes that are not the same for the California return as they are for the federal.
Right.
So I've never used TurboTax, so you'd have to buy a TurboTax federal and then a TurboTax California state?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because they're not going to be the same.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, thanks, Joe, for your call here to the Saturday Special. You have a book here that you think is particularly
good,
right,
Richard? Well,
you know,
a lot of what we do, Mike, is counseling and helping self-employed people, and I pulled this off the rack, and it's something that people that are working for themselves, that are self-employed, that are maybe working with the multi-level marketing program or opening up their own business for the first time or even at it. It's called Working for Yourself. It comes from the NOLO Press, which is a very good resource for legal aids and tax assistance. Talking about the types of entity that one might have, like LLC, sub-S corporation, partnership, limited liability partnership, questions like that we get all the time. And I really like this book. It's put together by some competent people from the NOLO advisory board that tend to be attorneys and CPAs. It's a wonderful book. It's about $40 and well worth it versus, you know, coming into a CPA or an accountant or a lawyer, business consultant. You know, read this book first, and it takes care of many questions that we get daily.
Right.
So I'm an advocate for self-employment and for...
We got to do a program all about... there should be an ongoing program that you should host about that subject. Okay.
Thank you.
479-1080. Oh, well, no, we don't have time for that, except here's Rory wants to respond to the lady who said that he was bragging about having nine kids. I didn't take it that way, Rory, but what do you have to say?
No, Michael, I know you didn't, but, you know, that lady should go look at Europe and look at Italy, France.
Italy.
Even Germany.
Italy doesn't have enough.
Yeah, they're falling below replacement.
That's true.
Replaced by radical Muslim jihadists. And so in 50 years, it's going to be too late to do anything about it. So she'll be thanking me in about 20 years. She goes, you know, it was really smart. Anyway. Thank you, Richard. What's the name of your business again?
It's under my
consult with you.
Schmalz. Did I spell it right?
You did. It's in the phone.
Schmalz.
Like schmaltz.
Yeah. If you want to talk to me, I'm at 688-2898.
All right. And Mike, you should do a program on the water wars. I didn't.
Okay. Maybe next week, where we will have a very special announcement about the radio station. Okay. Stay with us, gang. Thanks for being with us. See you next time.
That's all, folks.
KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, San Jose. It's 12 noon.
I'm Chris Stanley. Muqtada al-Sadr's Mahdi army is resisting the Iraqi government forces' crackdown in Basra. Hundreds killed during the last 5 days of fighting, and Sadr is telling his fighters, who were observing a ceasefire, not to follow Prime Minister Maliki's order to lay down their weapons.
Prime Minister Maliki had initially given insurgents 72 hours to surrender and hand over their weapons. He has now extended that deadline to 10 days. Maliki is down there in Basra directing the fighting. He says he won't leave the city until security has been established there.
Fox's David McDougall in Baghdad, where fighting has also erupted sporadically between U.S. troops and Sadr's Mahdi army in its Baghdad suburb Sadr City stronghold. In eastern Baghdad, a roadside bomb has taken the lives of two American soldiers. Looks like the Treasury Department has plans in the works that would expand the Federal Reserve's power to monitor all of the financial markets. A proposal to be unveiled on Wednesday by Secretary Paulson, who points out this does not mean more regulation. For the third time in 3 months, a Bush administration heavy hitter is in the Mideast to work for restraint on Israeli-Palestinian hostilities. First, it was President Bush himself and Vice President Cheney, now the Secretary of State.
U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice has arrived here in Israel, and against the odds, she's attempting to re-energize a peace process that doesn't seem to be making much progress. She is meeting this evening with Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert here in Jerusalem. Thus far, she's been unable to motivate Olmert to stop construction in West Bank settlements or evacuate illegal settlement outposts.
Fox's Mike Tobin in Jerusalem. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas meets with Rice in Jordan tomorrow and Monday, and in May, he travels to Washington. Kosovo's prime minister has had his first meeting with European Union foreign ministers since Kosovo declared independence from Serbia last month, and he came away saying he expects all EU countries to give Kosovo diplomatic recognition soon. You're listening to Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Is a lot of opportunity for innovation, and success is a good thing. Making money is a good thing. We all want to make money. So if we can help the American consumer understand how to make more money, how to save more money, we've done something very valuable.
Alexis Glick, Director, the Fox Business Network.
I certainly hope that we are as foxy as we have been in everything we do, whether or not that's Fox News or Fox Primetime or 20th Century Fox. Between American Idol, 24, Fox News, I hope that we do the same thing for business news.
The most powerful name in news is going into business.
We have a tone, a quality, a credibility. There are tremendous opportunities for the average guy to get the kind of information that they have not been able to find anywhere else.
If you care about your financial health, isn't it time you got a second opinion? To locate Fox Business Network in your area, go to foxbusiness.com.
The Democratic presidential wrangle rolls on. From America's election headquarters, a small but increasing chorus of calls for Hillary Clinton to quit falling on deaf ears.
There are 10 more contests, fully 10 more, before June 3rd, before this thing gets all wrapped up. I think it would take a lot more than the pressure we've seen so far for her to get out. It would probably take her losing Pennsylvania.
Fox's Carolyn Shively on the campaign trail. And right now, Clinton is leading Barack Obama in Pennsylvania by double digits. And Bill Clinton is telling the Clinton naysayers to relax and cool it and let everybody vote. Well, first it was Nixon, then it was JFK. Now the filmmaker Oliver Stone says he's going to try to quickly make a movie and get it out about the current White House occupant.
The new film W, about the presidency of George W. Bush, due to begin shooting next month in Shreveport, Louisiana. A source close to the film saying they hope to have it complete by the time the president leaves office. Stone has said the film will focus on the life and presidency of the younger Bush and won't be an anti-Bush statement, telling Daily Variety it would be a fair, true portrait of a man who overcame alcoholism to become the most powerful figure in the world. There are reports that Josh Brolin will play the president, but Stone has not confirmed them. Lisa LaSera, Fox News Radio.
A heartwarming March Madness story.
Paul Davidson, the little college that could and did.
The Davidson Wildcats advance 73-56 over Wisconsin.
The small liberal arts school in North Carolina was better known for its free laundry service for students than its basketball program. But out of just 1,700 students, head coach Bob McKillop finding some players who could win.
So many guys contributing in so many ways.
Several hundred Davidson students taking advantage of the school's offer of a bus ticket to Detroit, a two-night hotel stay, and tickets to Friday night's game.
That's Fox's Jane Metzler. And I'm Chris Stanley, Fox News Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to KSCO 1080 on this Saturday, March 29th. I am Nikki James with your Central Coast weather forecast today. Mostly cloudy skies and a high of 62 degrees. The north-northwest wind will be between 10 and 13 miles per hour. Tonight it will be mostly cloudy with low around 43 degrees, and the north-northwest wind will be between 7 and 13 miles per hour. Sunday, we can expect some sunny skies and a high of 63 degrees. Your Monterey Bay boaters forecast, the northwest winds will be 5 to 10 knots, the wind waves 1 foot or less, and the northwest swell will be 3 to 7 feet at 9 seconds. And your current temperatures around the bay, Watsonville is 55 degrees, Salinas is